I'm Brother Tom Getz, and this is the AgeTurners.com podcast, where you can hear some fellowship about the way to be today's generation of age turners. In these podcasts, we're discussing an assortment of topics related to our fleeing and pursuing the Lord with companions. Today's podcast is a fellowship and continuation to this series. I hope you'll join us week after week to enjoy our fellowship. Last week, we were fellowshipping concerning our attitude towards the Lord's discipline. Over the last few weeks, we've been touching this matter of the discipline of God and His governmental hand when it comes upon us to deal with us or to train us or to discipline us. And we fellowshiped last week about the kind of attitude we should have. Well, there's another case in the Old Testament that I would like to start with today to fellowship with you, a very serious example of the Lord's governmental hand coming in to deal with someone who was very, very dear and near and close to God. And this person was Moses. In Numbers chapter 20, we have the story of the children of Israel reaching this place called Meribah. And at Meribah, they ran out of water. And so the children of Israel began to complain to Moses again. So Moses, he went to the Lord, and he cried out to God for God's solution to this problem. And when he did, the Lord gave him a word. It's in Numbers chapter 20, verse 8. It says this, "Take the rod and gather the assembly, you and Aaron, your brother, and speak to the rock before their eyes so that it yields its water." Speak to the rock was the clear word from God. Thus you shall bring forth water for them out of the rock and give the assembly and their livestock something to drink. And Moses took the rod from before Jehovah as he had commanded him. He did say, take the rod. He said, take the rod and speak to the rock. So Moses took the rod, and Moses and Aaron, verse 10, gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said to them, "Listen now, you rebels, shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his rod twice, and abundant water came forth, and the assembly and their livestock drank. Well, you see, you could tell from this that Moses was angry, and he was reacting to the children of Israel. The children of Israel were God's dear people, and before God, they were complaining. But they were complaining because they were thirsty, not necessarily because they were rebellious. There's a difference. Moses did not understand that. So when Moses came from God to them, it was like he was yelling at them. And he called them, "You rebels." And then instead of speaking to the rock, he struck the rock twice. Well, in verse 12, it says this, "And Jehovah said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me, to sanctify me in the sight of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them." Well, right away, the Lord's word came to Moses and Aaron. And God said to them, because you did this, you didn't speak to the rock, you struck it twice, you did not believe in me to sanctify me before the people. You gave the people the impression that I was angry at them, and I'm not angry at them. And you gave them the wrong expression, the wrong testimony of God to these people. You didn't sanctify me before the people. As a result of this, you are not going to go into the good land, and you're not going to lead the children of Israel into the good land. That means someone else will do this for you. Well, you know, that was a serious offense. In fact, that was such a serious offense that caused God to bring in his discipline on Moses that would not allow Moses to go into the good land. Now, Moses had been faithful to God for 40 years, caring for the children of Israel. On two occasions, God had already decided to destroy them, and Moses stood in the gap, and he intervened for them and interceded for them and caused God to repent. He was so near speaking to Moses like one who was face to face, like a friend, a companion. But even on this matter, it offended God because he didn't sanctify God to the people. Well, because Moses was near to God, obviously he prayed about this quite much and repented to God quite much. And when you come to Deuteronomy 3, Moses is now talking about this example when he's speaking to the children of Israel, and he's testifying to them how that he had prayed to Jehovah. And if you read Deuteronomy 3, 25 and 26, you can hear what Moses said. He said this, you know, in his prayer to Jehovah, he said, "Let me please cross over and see the good land that is across the Jordan, this fine hill country and Lebanon." The children of Israel had come right up to the border of the good land and had camped there and were about to cross over. And he asked God one more time, "Let me please cross over and see the good land." For 40 years, he's been bringing them into the good land, and he wasn't there. He wasn't quite there yet, but he was asking God. Verse 26 says, "But Jehovah was infuriated with me on your account and did not listen to me. And Jehovah said to me, 'Enough, speak no more to me about this matter.'" It's like almost like a parent speaking to his child who's begging and begging to do a certain thing, to go to the store, to go here, do this or that. And finally the parent says, "Stop it. Don't ask me again." And this is how the Lord responded to Moses. So you can see God deals with his people, even some that are so near to him, in a very, sometimes in a very severe way. It doesn't mean that Moses will not be in the kingdom. Certainly Moses is one of the overcomers, but God's discipline on Moses was that he could not go into the good land. And that was a serious, serious offense and a serious thing. And so today in our podcast, what I'd like to fellowship with you about is, what is the result of God's discipline? Why does he do that? You know, does he do it because he's angry and he wants to punish us? He wants us to suffer. Is there something morbid within God that it pleases him to see his children suffering? Absolutely not. Dear young people, never consider that God's discipline of us is just for the sole purpose of causing his children to suffer. No, he's dealing with us as sons. And like a father who's training and perfecting his sons, he's doing it out of love. And if he didn't do it, it would imply that he didn't love us. So his hand on us and his discipline of us is always with a great deal of love, and it's for our benefit. You see, he says he does it in Hebrews 12. We've covered this a few weeks. In Hebrews 12, he says, "For they," talking about our fleshly fathers, "they disciplined us for a few days as it seemed good to them, but he," this is God, "for what is profitable, that we might partake of his holiness." You see, if there's no profit, he won't discipline us. This means that the more we are exercised before him, the more profit that can benefit, the more discipline we will have. If we are dull, not exercised, and kind of loose, he might not discipline us that much. You might be able to observe some very dear Christians, and it seems to you that they suffer quite a bit. And the reason why is that they are quite exercised before the Lord. And because of that, what he's doing is he's doing something for their profit. Do you want to remain the same year after year, week after week, month after month, always the same with almost no change? Oh, absolutely not. We are so burdened that the Lord would grow in us, he would advance in us, and that we would not stay the same. So the first result, well, we could always understand that the result is for our profit. Then the verse goes on, that we might partake of his holiness. The real issue of God's discipline, the real result, is that we become partakers of his divine nature, which is his holy nature. This means it sanctifies us. It sanctifies us in our relationships. It sanctifies us in our living, sanctifies us in our all kinds of behavior and attitude. The benefit is that we partake of his holiness. And in verse 11 of Hebrews 12, it tells us that afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been exercised by it. This means it's absolutely a matter of life. And if we have the attitude, as we shared last time, then we and are exercised by it, then the fruit will be manifested. There will be a fruit of righteousness in our living and in our being. And so this is the result of God's discipline. Another verse that we used last time was in 1 Peter 5, when in chapter 5, verse 6, Peter tells the brothers there to be humbled under the mighty hand of God. In the verse before that, in verse 5, he said, God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. One of the results of God's discipline is that we receive the Lord as grace. That means we receive him as our enjoyment. That means we can enjoy him. Even while we're under his disciplining hand, we can receive his grace and enjoy him. There's another example of the Lord's discipline from the Old Testament. In chapter 48 of Jeremiah, verse 11, it tells us that Moab has been at ease from his youth, and he is settled on his lees, and has not been emptied from vessel to vessel, nor has he gone into exile. Therefore, his taste remains in him, and his scent is not changed. Oh, I hope you could pay close attention to this portion in Jeremiah 48:11. It says, Moab has been at ease from his youth. He had an easy life. He had no trouble, no suffering. And because of this, he is settled on his lees. When they were making wine in the old time, in the ancient time, they would cause the grapes to ferment. They would crush them, and they would put them in a vat or in a big container with everything there. The grapes, the skin, the crushed part, they called that the lees. And that's what settled on the bottom of the vat. And then they would pour it out. They would empty the vat into vessels. And they'd pour it once very carefully to not allow any of these lees, the things that were the kind of the collection on the bottom of the vat, to empty into the vessel. But no matter how careful you are, always some escapes and gets into the vessel. And so now you have a vessel that is maybe 90% wine, but still 10% of this residue. And so you've got to let that settle. And then you've got to pour it out again, and you pour it out again very carefully, and you pour it out from vessel to vessel. And that causes you to have a change. You see, none of us want that the lees to remain in our being. If we do, it'll damage the wine. And that's why it says, therefore, his taste remains in him, and his scent is not changed. Do you know some dear Christians, some young people, who it says their taste remains in him? They're still the same after so many years, and even after passing through so many things, they still have that same taste. And they still have that same scent, that same smell. It smells like flesh. It smells like the world. It smells like sin. There's a scent there. There's a taste there that remains. Saints, this is such a burden within me. But as we open ourselves to the Lord, and he brings in his disciplining hand, he empties us from vessel to vessel. Now, none of that is comfortable, but it yields this kind of result where we are no longer settled, our scent changes, and our taste changes. Now there's a different taste there. There's a taste of the triune God in us. There's a taste of the life-giving Spirit. We taste like the Lord a little bit more, and we have a scent that is not the scent of the world and the scent of the flesh. This little example is quite precious. The next thing that we have is in Romans 8:28, and it says, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And we can have the full faith and the full trust in God that the things that happen to us work. They work together. They work together with the life within us, with the Lord within us, for a profit, for good. And it's because we love the Lord and we're called according to his purpose. So we have the full assurance that all things, everything that happens to us, no matter what it is, no matter what the source, no matter where it came from, we don't blame people, we don't criticize, we don't complain, we just reap the good. Let the good work deeply in your being. And then finally, we have this word in Romans 5:3 that says, and not only so, but we also boast in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation produces endurance. The footnote on tribulations is quite touching. It says tribulations are part of the all things in Romans 8:28 that God causes to work together for good, that we might be sanctified, transformed, and conformed to the image of his Son, who has entered into glory. Because of this, we can receive tribulations as the sweet visitation and incarnation of grace, and thereby boast in them. Isn't that precious? Whatever we pass through, we can receive it as the sweet visitation and incarnation of grace. This is grace coming to us in the person of Christ in the midst of our tribulations. You see, this is the result of all of the Lord's dealing with us and his discipline with us. And we're so thankful that the Lord will not allow us to remain in a settled condition, but is always working in our life and in our living and in our environment to bring us on. How we thank the Lord for this. This is so precious. That's all for today. Please visit our website at www.hturners.com, or if you'd like to respond to this podcast, please email us at feedback@hturners.com. Don't forget, we are the generation that will end this age. For hturners.com, this is Brother Tom Getz.